Who with it now? Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, the PODcast. It's called that because it's Pride of Detroit and it's a podcast about your Detroit Lions of the NFL. It's football. It's Detroit football. It's what we do. 1-2 on the season right now, gentlemen, as we enter into week four against that's how Chicago people say Bears. It's proven scientific fact. That's what they do. They just to retch up all the filth in their gut. It's going to be a hate filled week. I love it. I love when we play the Bears. Let's get around, though. I'm Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern on Twitter. My man here, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. At Ryan underscore POD, gaining ground, going fast, doing what we do. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing wonderful. Hashtag we own the Bears. We started it.
We own the Bears. We started it. You've had Caldwell as your avatar, but you might have to go back to the sign. Unless, yeah. Does Alex still have that as his avatar?
He does. So we're still well represented in the Twitterverse.
Alex Reno, by the way, not with us tonight. He's doing real world stuff. You know who is with us? Fearless leader Jeremy Reisman.
Hashtag we own the Bears.
It's beautiful, isn't it, guys?
I love Bears Week. I love it and hate it. We'll get into the Bears a little bit later, but
I was going to say we'll get into the wrinkle of why we hate it.
Yeah, there was one thing that happened today that I wasn't too big of a fan of from the Bears, but
well, there's also the dread of, and we've veered away from our original topic we were going to start talking about, but there's also the dread that if you do lose this, if the streak does finally come to an end, it might be against Brian Hoyer, which is like, oh my God. Which with this defense could happen.
You don't want that to happen. You don't want to lose to Brian Hoyer. Your season is not looking good if you lose to Brian
Hoyer.
Your
defense is not looking good if you lose to Brian Hoyer. But let's talk about positives. So there's not like, this is getting out a little later in the week. And we don't want to talk too much about Green Bay. We like doing a lot more review stuff than preview, but we're going to preview the Bears. But I want to start the show by trying to take away the big positive from Green Bay, because let's face it, that game was, people keep saying I'm unoriginal for calling it a wet fart. And but that's probably the closest thing I have to talk about that game is wet farting. Just sharting. Like, that's what the defense was doing all day. I don't want to talk about the defense. I don't want to talk about sharts. I want to talk about the offense, because if there's anything to take away from this game, the offense, man. Like, you are down, what, 31-10 at the half, and you come back in, like, within a touchdown? Like, there's a lot of good in this offense. I know Football Outsiders, their numbers have it. Lions right now ranked third in team offense in DVOA. Obviously, this is before some defense adjustments, which they're going to do in week four. But, I mean, what do you guys think?
I think this offense, I've been saying it pretty much since the beginning of the season, even the preseason. Like, I think this can be a top five offense, and I think it's playing at a point right now where it is a top five offense. The running game obviously took a little bit of a step back last week, but that was kind of expected with a Green Bay defense that has stopped everyone trying to run the ball so far.
And losing Abdullah.
Abdullah, of course. But Matthew Stafford looks the best he's ever looked, and a lot of people are getting on Caldwell right now, and rightfully so for some reasons, but he was brought in to kind of be, you know, the quarterback whisperer, and I think you could make an argument that he's done so with Stafford so far, because I've never seen him play like this. This is easily the best I've ever seen him play.
I feel vindicated you say that, because I remember the argument always was when Caldwell was struggling last year, and I laid down that same argument you just said there, quarterback whisperer. Everyone was like, no, he's not good with quarterbacks. It's just because he had Peyton Manning. That was always the fly in the ointment was he had Peyton Manning. Thus, he's like who was already great. Thus, he wasn't good with quarterbacks. But it's like, no, this is what he is. This is what he does. He does well with quarterbacks.
Sure. And I mean,
it's been proven. It's been proven.
The counter argument to my point is obviously Jim Bob Cooter. And a lot of people are giving him all the credit for that. And Jim Bob Cooter definitely does.
Who hired Jim Bob Cooter, though?
That's true. But, I mean, we're talking about directly who's affecting Stafford, and it's hard to know being on the outside here. But the truth is they both probably deserve a fair amount of credit for the way Stafford's been playing right now because it's off the charts. He's a top five quarterback right now. I'm going to lay that out because it's something I really believe right now.
Top five quarterback. Ryan, what do you think?
I think that he is definitely a top five quarterback. He's fourth in DVOA. He's fourth in DYAR. He is seventh in DVOA. I think that you can't be any happier than I could not, as a Lions fan, I could not be any happier about the way that Matthew Stafford has played so far. He's shown the ability to take this offense and not only lead it, but it seems like he knows where everything is going to be, and he knows when to put the ball and where to put it. There have been plays that there have been the broken plays. Receivers have made plays. Marvin Jones made a play, made a couple plays in the Green Bay game that were especially impressive. But I don't think you could be any happier as a Lions fan with the performance of Matthew Stafford so far this year. I mean, the numbers kind of speak for themselves. He so far this year, 985 yards passing through three games, 67.5% completion percentage, 7 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, 1 interception, you know, coming last week. And that doesn't count as an interception in my Matthew Stafford notebook. If I'm going to do my own review of Matthew Stafford so far this year, but you got to be happy with the way that Stafford's playing so far.
I have a question for you guys. How many of you guys had Matthew Stafford listed as a top 10 quarterback in your list cast?
None of us.
None of us did.
I think there was one.
You?
What, are you going to try to claim this out of your man? You had him at 10 right now, right? You had him at 10 during the list cast?
Yes, sir.
Nice job, Jeremy. Good job.
Good job. I also want to bring up Brian Callahan as the quarterback's coach. I was like looking around for that while we were talking. So I think that guy gets some credit there too. Maybe. Sure. I don't know.
Let's give him 10%.
10% of the people do whatever it takes. Or is it 5%? I don't remember which piano says it. I'm sorry, I derailed that. Like, yeah, Stafford looks incredibly good. He has a command of this offense that I have not seen in a long time. Like, and I don't think that's all just system. I don't think that's all just system. As much as I think the majority of it's system, there has been some improvement. I've been mostly on the side of system, but starting to move off of it. And you know what the thing is, too, is like I'm starting to noticing it on a national level, too. Like nationally, people are picking up on Matt Stafford, which is, again, that hasn't really happened before. I'm sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to add, like, kind of talking about the scheme a little bit. I was a little worried last year after Joe Lombardi was fired, and, you know, there was those comments that came out that said Stafford wasn't smart enough to pick up his offense. I've never seen Matthew Stafford look smarter than he does now. A really good example of that was the fourth down play against Green Bay, where he clearly audibled into something, whether he was changing pass protection or what. If he was changing pass protection, it was a great call because on that play, we had Theo Riddick with an excellent chip block to save the play. And then it was that out two-yard touchdown pass to Anquan Boldin. And it worked perfectly. He threw it perfectly. The protection was perfect. It just shows to me how much he understands right now of the system that he's in. And whether it's, you know, intelligence, whether it's Jim Bob Cooter's teaching, whatever it is, it's working. And he's never been better.
And the other thing that I want to say about, you know, to a degree, yes, it might be system, but at the end of the day, I can't stand when people talk about Russell Wilson being a system quarterback, because you want to create a system that accentuates the strengths of your quarterback, right? I mean, you want to create an offense that that makes your quarterback better. And the only thing I want to say about Stafford was he's playing this offense to an expert level, but then you still see the flashes of where he's able to improvise. The Anquan Boldin touchdown, I think it was it in the first week against the Colts? That ill-advised throw that he made?
Oh, right. Yeah. I think that it was either that or Tennessee, but yeah.
I guess the point remains. I mean, even on some of the plays where he's left to improvise, he's still made incredible plays. He still has the arm strength, and he still has everything. But the fact that he's just working so well in the system, that just speaks to his ability as a quarterback and kind of his maturity, I guess, too.
Now, we're running out of time here, and then we need to move on.
Sure.
But just real quick, the other part of the equation here was Marvin Jones, too. So what do you got? Like, I was terrified when he came over from Cincinnati, because in Cincinnati, he had a habit of 1 week, good numbers. Next week, dead as a ghost. And he hasn't been that. He's been like, he's been consistent through 3 weeks, and he's been a top receiving threat.
I think a lot of that probably has to do with the fact that he's just not. Well, I mean, knock on wood, we haven't had any injury concerns with Marvin Jones quite yet. But the other thing, too, though, is, you know, he's getting a sizable amount of targets. He's gotten more targets than Golden Tate. I don't want to say that he's clearly the number one wide receiver, even though it's seeming that, you know, it's seemingly trending that way. It's trending. I don't want to give up on Golden Tate quite yet. I think that at the end of the day, it's still going to be kind of this like 1A, 1B situation. But you know, Marvin Jones is just he's second in DYAR, sixth in DVOA. He's clearly playing at, you know, a level at which I don't think anybody would have expected those kind of numbers through 3 weeks. He's leading the league in receiving.
I mean, I expected him to be the number one receiver, and I think he's undoubtedly it now.
Did you expect this? Did you expect this?
No. Yeah. No, absolutely not. I did expect a jump in numbers, because obviously the Lions are a more pass heavy team than the Bengals have ever been.
Sure.
But I did not expect him to be leading the league in receiving yards through 3 weeks. That's insane.
No, you didn't have him top 10 in your list cast, did you?
And
no.
By the way, that's not just him just getting like yards nonstop too. He had a 200 yard game, but like you look on the stat sheet, 40 yards to Golden Tate, 69 yards. Nice. To Eric Ebron.
Yeah, I think
39, I think, about 40 yards to Theo Riddick, and another 20 some yards to Anquan Boldin. Like, again, passing it around still happening, but a lot of it is still going to Marvin Jones.
And Jones deserves a lot of credit, because he's getting a lot of yards after the catch, too. I think he has like 9 catches of 20 plus yards, and those aren't throws that are 20 plus yards downfield. Those are him making yards after the play. He's making plays.
To wit, like, I should have read actually the number of receptions made. So he had only 6 receptions.
Right.
I mean, he had 6 receptions.
200 yards. Riddick,
6 receptions, whereas Ebron had 5, Tate had 4, Riddick had 7, Boldin had 4. So it's not too much of a deviation from the pack here. It's not like he's just getting targeted all day. It's just, again, he's creating a lot of those yards.
He's making the most plays when the ball's in his hands right now. And
he's making plays.
I mean, he's even making plays real quick. He's even making plays when the ball isn't in his hands. The toe taps on the sideline.
I love those.
That catch in Green Bay, that was mighty impressive.
I was telling someone else the other day, like, I love the toe tap. It is my favorite thing in football. It is just sheer sex to me. Like the toe tap, if you can toe tap along a sideline, I love you. Like, you are one of my favorite receivers out there.
This just in, Marvin Jones is sex to Chris Lemieux.
He's sexy. All right, let's take a quick break and we come back. And you know what time it is, gentlemen?
We own the Bears. That was sloppy execution.
We'll do better. All right, continuing on here on the Pride of Detroit podcast. We don't do a lot of preview stuff in the past because we like reviewing the stuff. We like numbers. You'll have to let us know if you guys like preview stuff. I am just not one of the mind of it, because in my mind, it's...
It's always easier to analyze than it is to predict.
It's not that it's easier or anything. I just think it's better content to analyze than predict, because predictions are, politely speaking, blowing it out of your ass.
Right. That's what I mean.
But you're saying, you're making it sound like predictions would be harder, whereas, like, no, predictions are probably easy, too. It's just that, like, because no one can tell you you're wrong, right?
Well, not until after the fact, but yeah.
No, yeah, exactly.
There's no substance to predictions. It's just...
There really isn't, and I've always kind of fought against that, but...
Says the guy who's just bragging about how he had Matthew Stafford in his top 10 quarterbacks list before
I'm
the season.
I'm talking about game-winning, losing predictions. Uh-huh.
That's List Cast. List Cast is sublime. There will be no hate of the List Cast.
Podcast Nirvana right there.
Yeah. We're going to have List Cast back by week 10, by the way, on the bye
week. Wait. Can't wait.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Bears. And about how much we own them.
We own the Bears.
We own the Bears. We own the Bears.
We own the Bears?
We own the Bears.
We own the Bears.
Okay, preview over. No. So as much as the Lions are 1-2, and it's been an ugly 1-2, that can mean anything. The Bears are right now... An uglier 0-3 and no help on the horizon.
Zero. None. It's getting worse and worse.
None. Is Jay Cutler, is he going to be back this week, or is it going to be Brian Hoyer?
It's almost certainly going to be Brian Hoyer. It's not 100% at this point, but obviously no injury reports are out yet. We're recording this on Tuesday night, so neither team has even practiced this week, but I would not expect to see him suit up this week.
Yeah, I mean, I obviously haven't been paying attention, so I don't know like what his problem is, but whatever. But let's talk about, first off, I want to bring up this hot take. Before we even get there, let's talk about the news that broke today, Tuesday, that is kind of yanking our heartstrings a little bit.
And one of us more than the other two.
More than anyone else, yeah.
Jeremy, go ahead.
You're going to make me say the words out. If I don't say it out loud, it didn't happen.
You got to accept it, man. You got to accept it. If you don't, the grief will never start properly. We can't get this out of you until you accept it.
Grand Valley's own Detroit Lions' own Joy Cabell.
Grand Valley. Oh, Jesus. Wayne State's own.
Oh,
Wayne
Jeremy. State. Whatever.
Did you fuck this up already?
I'm sorry, Joik. You know what? I'm not sorry, Joik. You stabbed me in the back, I stabbed you in the back.
Hey, man, he's getting that money.
I know. Joik had to take the job, but he's with the Bears now this week, and people are being all cynical and thinking he's going to run up for 200 yards and a couple touchdowns. He's not going to be their starting running back this week. He's not. He might be. He'll probably be the backup, and he might see, you know, 6 to 10 touches, and yeah, he might get a touchdown too, but
maybe that might be wishful thinking.
I mean, did anyone forget that what he was averaging near the end too? Like, it's not like that running average has gotten better.
Don't you get me started on Joik Bell last year, because he started out real bad, but he finished like the last 8 games with 4.0 yards per carry. He rebounded, and when he's surrounded by a good team and a good scheme, he can do well. But guess what? The Bears have neither of those things. They have a bad offensive line. Their offense is really bad. They don't have their starting quarterback. Joik Bell might see a goal line carry or two. He might score. He better not do the hip hop hooray thing, or I'm going to get real mad.
Well, let's talk about their quarterback, because I was coming up with a hot take and before I realized what Jay Cutler's contract is, but someone already beat me to this. Steve Rosenblum in the Chicago Tribune: did John Fox just begin the end of the Jay Cutler era?
Oof. What does that mean?
Let's see. I that is sizzling, considering that like he still probably has at least another year or two of guaranteed money coming his way. And massive, massive, massive cap hit until 2020. The dead cap the dead cap goes down in 2017. They're only paying him $2 million in dead cap next season. So, I mean, they could move on if they wanted very soon. But, go on.
To end an era, don't you have to start a different era?
Oh boy.
You need the, well that that
who
imagines
the hell what is going to start in Chicago.
Mark Sanchez.
Mark Sanchez has thrown his last pass in the NFL.
I imagine that that like that era that he's talking about means that they're going to draft a quarterback in the next draft, which I mean, they could. There's going to be a couple of good quarterbacks out there. There's going to be Deshaun Watson out there. There's going to be a few more.
They're certainly trending towards a top five pick right now.
Yeah, definitely. And you're not going to deviate too much from a top pick with Brian Hoyer in as quarterback. I don't know. It's kind of funny because before this year for Stafford, like you look at Cutler and Stafford, and I'm sorry, but they were kind of that same tier of quarterback when it came to a lot of their stats. Their stats were very similar for quite a few years. Stafford stepped up, Cutler didn't. So.
And the one difference between the two has always been, you know, 4 or 5 years in age, too. So,
yes. Like
Cutler has maybe 3-4 years of adequate play. Stafford could go another 10, really.
Yes. And Cutler's not getting any younger, too. He's going to be 34 before the 2017 season starts. Now, that's a lot of crapping on their offense, but their defense, man.
Their defense is not in good shape. There are players that are injured, and they are important players.
Let's see. I'm just looking up their DVOA for defense, because that's where I go. They're actually 17th in defense. Still not that good. Let's see. Where's Tennis? Every team that the Lions know, Indianapolis has a 28th ranked defense. So, but either way, so, yeah.
I don't know. I think it's more so the personnel that the Bears are missing. They're without their top cornerback in Kyle Fuller. They are without Lamar Houston, who suffered a torn ACL. They are without Pernell McPhee, without a doubt their best defender on the team. They are without Danny Trevathan, who
their biggest offseason pickup, right?
Yeah, and you know he opted to have surgery on his torn thumb because he was like, well, forget this shit. Why even play this season? So their defensive unit is in bad shape.
The fact that they've kind of held their head above water a little bit is,
I mean, I'm not worried about it this week because I think the Lions offense is rolling and will continue to roll. But, you know, it gives them some hope because that defense was really, really bad last year and the years before that, basically ever since their locker left. So it's trending in the right way, in the right direction, but these injuries have kind of decimated them before the season even started.
This is kind of why I like that, you know, we're going to Soldier Field like now rather than near the end of the year, because it's like, okay, you get the away game out of the way while they're basically down on the down for the count.
Yeah. Well, hold on. The Bears are actually 28th in DVOA.
On defense? No, overall DVOA.
Yeah, their defensive rank is 28th.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I was looking at overall.
You were looking at their last week, and their last week they were 16th, but now they're 28th. They're bad. They're awful, no good. 26.
I apparently can't read, so.
No, you're good. 26 against the pass, 26 against the rush.
I realize what I did wrong. I'm sorry. I'm trying to remove it.
Don't do
you're right.
That.
29th. So the Lions have faced
28.
Oh God, I was reading the wrong one again. This segment's called Chris Can't Read.
Chris versus
I'm
charts.
Sorry, I've got. I'm like
charts
really
one, charts three, Chris zero.
This is why I can't do a job with Excel.
So yeah, I think we all agree then that the Lions' offense versus the Bears' defense is just about as, you know, mismatched of a matchup that you can find in the NFL this week, right?
Yeah, pretty much. They're like, just going back to the, like, just all around, we've covered this all now. Like, the run game's a bit of a shambles that they had to bring in Joique Bell. They don't really have much of an offensive line. They're down to Brian Hoyer as their quarterback, probably. And their defense is decimated. So, like, where, like, looking from this, just as far as kicking the Bears, which we love to do, I mean, this matchup, we said it already here with the Lions, like, this is a really good matchup for them. So, like, just where do you kind of see the Lions taking this game. I think what we've learned about the Lions so far is that the offense kind of starts and stops in sputters, I would say. Like,
fair to say, because there was, you know, the week one game against Indy, they either scored a touchdown on a drive and went 3 and out, or went 3 and out on a drive.
Right. And I see a reliance sometimes. I see a lot of the Lions for some reason trying to establish ground game when it's like, why are you doing this? You don't have a ground game. Don't worry. I hate the idea. I need someone to explain to me the idea of establishing a ground game rather than just like having a ground game to mix it up. Like, I don't know what needs to be established, to be honest, but this is me failing at football, even though I played some of it.
Well, there's a couple of reasons.
I'm just saying, like, that was my biggest complaint with that Green Bay game is, like, you know, their defensive line is good. And yet, all these early possessions while Green Bay is just rolling and rolling, you're handing off to Theo Riddick when you should be throwing through the air.
You just can't become one dimensional. You can't become one dimensional like that, though, because then they're going to tee off on Stafford and, you know,
that's fine. But I'm asking why not do the run game later? Like, why not, like, have possession where it's mostly passing, and then it's like, okay, now on this set of downs, now we will hand off to change the tempo, rather than being like, we need to hand it off twice to start the first possession.
Well, I think it has something to do going back to the Indianapolis game. There were a couple of drives where it just went 3 and out because there were 3 straight pass plays, and for whatever reason, Stafford was maybe not on the same page as the receivers, or he got unlucky and got a drop, or... Like we've talked about, this offense being a quick read, get the ball out. You know, if you get 2 plays that go for 3 yards and all of a sudden you have an incompletion on 3rd down, then you're kind of screwed. I don't know. I think the Lions being so bad at running the ball last season, going into this year, the first 2 games, maybe they were a little bit of an aberration. I don't know if I can believe in 116 yards against the Colts, 137 yards against the Titans. I'm not sure if those are true things, but then again, the Packers game, you only run for 50 yards. We saw a Theo Riddick that we're more accustomed to seeing. Dwayne Washington kind of, you know, burst out on the scene a little bit and had some, you know, productive carries. But Green Bay was also, they're also one of the top defenses in rush defense. They're one of the best teams in football at stopping the run. So I think that the Lions are more so, I would say they're probably going to end up towards the end of the year as like a league average rushing attack, like somewhere between 16 and 20.
Yeah, probably. I think losing Abdullah really hurts you there. But so that's the offense. But yeah, like the offense can start and sputter. So but I think, you know, eventually you're just looking for and hoping for some consistency on offense. I think if that has to be a key to the game, that would be one of my keys to the game.
Another one.
And that's the thing, like, they're going to put up points, so they're going to need a running game.
Be consistent in offense. Be consistent in offense.
Yeah, but I think they're also going to need to milk some clock. They're going to score points. They're going to need to milk some clock because we know how this defense is going to play. It's not going to play well, and they're going to need all the rest they can get.
Well, that's the other thing I want to talk about, defense. Yeah, the defense won't play well, but on the other hand, like, can they play well at least against Brian Hoyer? This isn't Aaron Rodgers you're going up against, so you don't have to worry about Aaron Rodgers constantly burning you on 3rd down, which is what he was doing in Green Bay. So you can probably get some stops, but, I mean, it's Brian Hoyer.
I think that's totally within the realm of possibility. This is kind of more so a personnel question, but I know with the Lions re-signing Aaron Dobson and sending Xavier Gooden back to the practice squad, what does that mean for the linebacker situation? Do we think that Antoine Williams is going to be healthy? Because I don't see them making that move unless they're getting a linebacker back.
Yeah, I don't want to speculate too much considering this is coming out like sure. Wednesday morning. So,
but that's exactly how I read the situation. Some people think it might be a sign that Levy's coming back. Sorry to say, I don't think Levy's coming back now. Probably not next week. Maybe a couple weeks, but... I think the Lions should have Antoine Williams back. He was looking okay. We're still relying on what, a 5th-round rookie, 6th-round rookie. So
it's all right. It's better than a guy who didn't make the 53-man
team. I suppose that's true.
Yeah, like there's levels to this. But I guess the question is, like, if you're Chicago and you're looking at this defense, like, I don't know, you just like look to Hoyer and it's like, look, we're going to have Alshon Jeffrey run these like quick routes and just try to pick him across the middle and try to get the ball out that far.
Whatever you want to say about PFF, whatever, but their interior linemen have graded out very high. Cody Whitehair has done a really good job. You know, getting Josh Sitton was a good pickup for them because he has played well so far. But the interior of their line has played really well. And when Jordan Howard has gotten the ball, he has run efficiently. He's rushed for over 5 yards a carry. So I think that they're going to try to run the ball against the Lions defense. And that wouldn't surprise me because they've seen other teams do it to success. Tennessee had their way with running the ball. I would even argue that clearly Eddie Lacy and his China food belly had a great time running against the Lions defense.
Yeah, but that's kind of the one downside, because I kept saying for a long time defensive line is still strong for the Lions. And yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was thinking that, and then fat ass Eddie Lacy runs all over them.
I mean, I know that's a linebacker. That's more so a linebacker problem, but the defensive line, it's just so disappointing so far.
I'm looking at run blocking. Let's see here. They put about Detroit overall 28th defensive line on Football Outsiders. Obviously, that's predicated on like power success, power rank. It's not just a quick and dirty 28th in the league thing, but still they grade very poorly in most of their metrics.
I mean, I think the keys to the Lions defense are very simple. One is stop the run, which I have a little more faith in their defense than I guess you guys do, which is fine. And the other one is have Darius Slay shut down Alshon Jeffrey, because I don't know if anyone else on that Bears offense can really threaten the Lions defense. And Alshon Jeffrey is real good. I don't care what his stats are. He showed plenty of times this season already and in the preseason that if you just throw him a jump ball, he can get big splash plays, you know, 4 or 5 times a game.
Well, what about Zach Miller? The Lions have been getting killed by tight ends, and he had a great game last week against Dallas.
Oh, no.
Two touchdown catches.
We saw what tight ends do. We saw what Delanie Walker did.
I think you have to be concerned more so. I think that Slay will shut down Alshon Jeffrey no problem. I think that Slay is the best player on this defense, hands down. Even I'll go so far as to say, even if Ziggy Ansah and DeAndre Levy were healthy, Darius Slay is the best defensive player the Lions have on their team.
I'll bite my tongue.
I know. Go ahead. And you should also burn your jersey. But the one thing I was going to say is that I'm nervous about Nevin Lawson on Kevin White. I think that's going to be a huge problem.
That's fair. Yeah.
You like Kevin White, though.
I love Kevin White.
So, yeah, I have one kind of thing to say about the outcome here. A lot of people were saying that the Lions should beat the Titans and should blow out the Titans at home. I think this is a game that the Lions should blow out the Bears. I don't think it was a great matchup with the Titans. I think this is a great matchup. The offense should roll all game. The defense isn't good, but they're playing in a Bears offense that isn't good either. This is a perfect matchup for them. Obviously, a divisional road game is always kind of tough, but the Lions absolutely should win this game. No question.
You know what we love? You know what we love? We love Rage Corner, and we love Wally's World, and they're coming next. So before we do, though, any predictions on the lot for the Lions-Bears?
What's your prediction for the fight, Ben?
Prediction?
Yes, prediction.
Pain.
Suck my
yelling.
Can you take a break?
Yelling!
Can you take a break?
I'm yelling at you!
Can you take a break?
Yelling!
Can I get my d*** sucked?
Can you hear me? Yelling!
Can I get my d*** sucked?
Yelling! Yelling!
Are you ready to suck now? Have you got it all out? Mad, ain't you?
Stupid!
Red face!
Listen!
Now you're calling me stupid!
Listen! Yes, I am!
This is Kangaroo Court!
You know what? You have a constitutional right to be a dumbass!
It's rage time. It's time to rage. It's time to get angry. It's time to yell at people and throw things and, you know, say things you might later regret. It's Rage Corner. I have no rage this week. I really don't. I've been pretty mellow. I do have some rages, but they're not like NFL related. So I really can't like go to any of them.
You don't want to get political?
I could. Do you want shouldn't. Me to get political?
You shouldn't. You shouldn't, because we don't talk about enough football on this podcast.
Clearly not enough football. All right. Let's start with Ryan. I think you had a rage.
Okay. Yeah, I could get into this real easily. Hey, Fox Sports, quit changing the goddamn score bug. I'm sick of you changing the way that I'm supposed to interpret very imperative game information. All I need is who is playing, the score, how much time, the down and distance, and the play clock. I don't need anything else. Timeouts, I can do without them. If they're not hidden well enough in your score bug, screw it. We don't need them. This is the problem. Why are you including the team records? It does not matter what your record is at this point. The numbers were so tiny that you couldn't discern them anyways. I have 20/20 vision. I'm bragging about my vision right now, and I could barely make out what the records were. This is not important. This is not important at all.
I think they're designing these things like the score bugs have gotten smaller and smaller, like ESPN's for like all of their college footballs got incredibly small, kind of like Fox's did.
And that's a good thing, though. That's a good thing, though, right?
Okay, I would say it is a good thing if you are watching like at home on like a super high definition TV or something. But if you're at a bar, or if you are like me, aka that is poor, who does not have a bleeding cutting edge television, or his biggest television is probably only a couple inches bigger than my computer monitors. Those bugs are really hard to make out. And then, yeah, if you put in a tiny little number in there for the record, which like who the hell needs to know your like season record constantly?
No, nobody needs to know your season record but, constantly. Like,
it's really hard to look at it. It's really hard to see. I have to squint.
And not even though that it's just hard to see, it's taking up space where other things can be bigger. You could make the score bigger. You could make the team names bigger. You could even make room for these dumb timeouts that some people in this room want to include, but whatever.
Shut up.
It's not just you. It's Jeremy, too.
This is
the thing, is that we've seen this clear evolution. Like they've had the score where it's across the top and it's the full bar. They've done away with that. They went to the box and they've modified the box now. And it used to have like curves to it. And now it's just a straight box. This is the thing. Quit changing it. Find a way to do it and just do it. Don't change it. Make it easy.
From a designer aesthetic, too, like it's not even like there's still a lot of like if I'm correct, I'll have to go look. It's still kind of a little poppy. It's got that like, you know, that bevel pop to it where it's like, you know, ESPN kind of went flat and everything, because when you get that small, you can't have extra details there like that.
Yeah, because then it makes it even more difficult to see, as you already mentioned. You know, I was watching the ESPN, the Monday night broadcast, they do the score along the bottom, and it's fine. It stays out of the way. It's not in the way at all. The box is almost in the way, in a sense. It put it at the bottom of the screen where...
That's where ESPN puts their, like, they have a bug that is the size of that Fox bug for, like, college football. But it is, as you say, it's in the bottom right corner.
Okay, well, I mean, for Monday Night Football, at least, they do the entire bar along the bottom.
Right, so it's not just... And it, like, goes up and
CBS
down.
CBS does that, too, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm totally fine with that. Just the least amount of space you can take up, and I can still see the information I need to see. We're good. We're good.
Yeah.
Stop screwing with your score bug, Fox. You're pissing me off.
I like it. All right, Jeremy, what do you have something to rant about?
I do, and... Before today, I was going to rant about pass interference and how spot foul is the stupidest thing in the world because it allows 66-yard penalties on a mistaken call.
Right. But, well, we covered that. We covered that in your article.
I wrote about it.
I do want to, before I let you get to your rant, since we're on this topic, I do want to address the people who are like talking about, well, why don't they just, you know, have receivers then, you know, if it's going to be deep, why don't receivers just commit pass interference? That's not how football works. You people telling me because you guys asking if I've ever played football because you think my opinions are dumb. That's not how it works. If you're saying that, like that's a terrible opinion because that doesn't happen in college. It doesn't happen in college football. It's 15 yards there. It's fine. And yeah, that's all I really have.
That was your mini rage corner.
Yeah, I do because I don't want them reviewing pass interference. I really don't.
That's a whole nother
thing. I don't need this game to be 6 hours.
All right. So pass interference inside. I've got another beef. And it's with Twitter snitches, the worst people in the world.
Oh, my God. Yes.
The worst people in the world. And
the worst.
I'm specifically referring to an incident today on Twitter. Someone snitched on 97.1, and this is the only time I'm going to come to their defense. Someone snitched on 97.1 to Eric Ebron, saying they were talking trash about Eric Ebron. Kudos to Eric Ebron, who responded IDGAF. And if you don't know what that means, kids, go to UrbanDictionary.com and look it up. But then, of course, when he says that, we get another Twitter snitch that notifies everyone who works at 97.1 that Ebron doesn't give an F about them. And what are you doing this for? Who are you benefiting? Who do you think you're being a superhero to when you're telling on someone because they said something bad about
something? You know what that is? And I'm going to be hella racist here. That's white people instincts. That's white people instincts right there.
I don't want to throw race into it or anything like that. But it's this weird thing that like people feel the need to snitch on everybody for what reason? For like why? Why do the truth is most of these people don't care and they're totally fine being oblivious to people on Twitter yelling about certain things. Even if it's us on the podcast, we were kind of afraid we were going to get snitched on last week. I don't think we ended up getting snitched on. Thank you, listeners, for not being a snitch, because we all know what snitches get.
They get ditches. Thrown in ditches.
Stitches with stitches.
I don't care. At me, like, Rieger. Look, I don't care. I'm just still about it.
I don't like Twitter snitches either. Like, I have this one guy who follows me and I love him, bless his heart and all. But if I link him like a article or something, he will reply to me. Thanks. I will try to read this. And then he will like at the author in that chain. I'm like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't include me in this. Or like if I retweet something, like if you reply to the retweet, it will include your tag in it. So that person will know who retweeted it. This is the low key snitching that I also hate. You know,
passive aggressive.
No, it's passive. It's passive snitching. It's like keep my name out of your mouth snitching kind of stuff like that. Yeah. And like, yeah, like everything else. And there's just. Yeah. If you're talking about a celebrity and you never added them and all of a sudden someone comes into your mentions and then adds them in there. Like, yeah, like I just. You're absolutely right, Jeremy. Who does it benefit?
Nobody. And the thing is, like, if you have a problem with something I'm saying or something else someone else is saying, why don't you man up and throw in your opinion instead of going, oh, man, this guy is saying something to you. You should say something back. Like, no, why don't you just get in the argument or keep the fuck out?
You know what it is, too, is like it's like that. The one you brought up is a fairly benign kind of snitching in that no one gets hurt. I've seen people snitching, though, on Twitter to try to cost people their jobs. And it's one thing if it's like someone's being like incredibly racist on Twitter and you like out them for that. But like what, like I've seen other cases where it's just like someone calls a think tank writer a scumbag or something and they find out and they just like try to drive that person out of their job. To me, that's toxic. Like, no one should lose their job because of social media. I understand if, like, you're posting really dumb stuff, but if you're just saying, like, someone was bad or you're just kind of, like, expressing an opinion that is maybe, like, hurtful to someone but isn't, like, offensive on a grand scale, you shouldn't lose your job about that. Incidentally, this is why I've been like scrubbing every mention of my my personal name from my Twitter account. I ain't gonna take this out.
At Rieger 1984, at me, bro.
Let's do Wally's World.
Where's Wally? Where's Wally? Did you see him? Where's Wally?
Where's Wally? Where's Wally?
Where's Wally?
Ryan, I hate to ask you this. Like, I tried to see if we had a second Wally's World. Like, maybe that Wally was melting down because the Tigers are melting down or something else. But this is what you have, and you want to charge forward with this. So let's try to do this.
All right. So Wally this week, this actually kind of spawns back to last week because it was Friday. Wally heard the Paul Feinbaum comments that he made about Michigan, calling them, and go ahead and Chris fill us in.
I just want to say before we jump into this, like, as soon as you said Wally had been listening to the Paul Feinbaum show, I started screaming, like in real life screaming, because I'm like, no.
I don't know if he was listening to the Feinbaum show, but just the fact that he's listening to the outlets that, you know,
well, ESPN, yeah, ESPN does have him on a lot of their other programming because he is like a college football analyst guy for them, which I don't know how that is, because Feinbaum, if you're not familiar with the Paul Feinbaum show, A, you have never lived in the South, and B, you just don't really pay attention to much college football. Paul Feinbaum's kind of like the king of Southern college football radio. He's like the head of the SEC network kind of stuff for them. And he beefs very regularly with Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, because Jim Harbaugh loves to take pot shots at the SEC. And Paul Feinbaum's career is the SEC.
Right. So with Jim Harbaugh rubbing him the wrong way for ever since he made the move to Michigan, right?
Paul Feinbaum. It's been going on nonstop since.
Paul Feinbaum decided to finally say what was on his mind about the U of M fan base. And he said that they are the most pathetic fan base in all of college football, that they are just, quote, a bunch of whiners. And my dad, the man who bleeds blue and yellow.
How dare you? How dare you?
I can't escape without getting my own pot shots, but for a man who loves Michigan football through and through, this did not bode well. So I see my dad, and he lets me know that he had heard Paul Feinbaum's comments, and he was not upset with it. He was absolutely livid. He was not okay with it in any regard, and I don't think my dad hates anybody more than he hates Paul Feinbaum now. Like, I think that if he ever sees him on ESPN, he'll just be absolutely upset for the rest of the next segment. I don't think that anybody could probably get my dad hotter than Paul Feinbaum. Pause.
Jesus.
But he was not happy in the slightest bit. Let's just say he was more angry about that singular comment than the Tigers imploding on themselves.
Wow. Well, let's hope your dad never decides to turn on the SEC network in the morning then, or mostly College Game Day or anything like that.
He's too busy watching reruns of, was it Undisputed with Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp? Oh,
by the way, okay.
You want me to give you a quick Wally's World take? My dad the other day during Football Sunday, he leans over and he goes, "I really like Shannon Sharp."
Can I just say, like, I just realized we are now a good 45 minutes into this recording, and we have not talked about the Jason Whitlock cyberhuman rant at all. And you just reminded me, because I realized that, like, the Skip Bayless Shannon Sharp thing is going to completely bury Speak for Yourself, which is that awful Colin Cowherd, Jason Whitlock, Jason McIntyre show that Fox does. But like, let's get into it in the mailbag. Before we open the mailbag, we're going to talk about Jason Whitlock's amazing rant. Before we begin the mailbag here, and once again, if you want to send us a question at any point, Pride to Detroit on Twitter when we ask for it, or ask POD. The questions are a little old here because we sent it out on Monday, but they're still good. But I want to lead talking about Jason Whitlock, who I think is slowly losing his mind.
Why do you say that, Chris?
Well, I think what happened was Greg Howard of Deadspin put out that hit piece on him way back about, like, can Whitlock save the Black Grantland at ESPN from himself? Which, the Black Grantland, that was kind of his project. It became The Undefeated, and he was removed from it because he was kind of crazy. But, like, it just... It's a great piece by Greg Howard, if you can go and find it from Deadspin. But it's just kind of, since that time, just Jason Whitlock's takes have been getting just so bad. They are like hyper right-wing conservative. They are the kind of two, like, there's a lot of levels to Jason Whitlock. But I think this rant he put out last Friday, talking about humans versus cyberhumans, this might be his guiding principle of all of his sports / social issues cross section, like how he views the cross section of social issues and sports, how he views it from here on out as humans versus cyberhumans is kind of like his Das Kapital. It is like the guiding principle of everything, because every time he sees an opinion that he just doesn't agree with now, he attributes it to the cyberhumans, who, as he claims, quotes, goes to Instagram for sex.
They visit Instagram for sex.
Call me a cyberhuman.
Yeah. And like, I'm just everything. Kidding. It is a Sierra, fantastic. It's about a fantastic, what, 3-minute video, Ryan? You watched it.
Yeah, well, I don't think I made it all the way through.
I did. It's genuinely funny.
Let's just say that the best thing about it is when he makes this distinction between humans who go out and live in a real reality versus the cyberhumans who only experience reality through a computer screen. He talks about how people go on Instagram for sex.
They visit Instagram for sex.
And then somebody went back into the Twitter archives and found a tweet of him saying, is there any way that you can DM on Instagram through
through
a desktop? Then he goes, oh, I guess I found out that you can only do it through phone. Old
thirsty.
Me. I'm so old.
Whitlock's kind of been known about being thirsty too. Like, and this, and also the fact that it's like, you know, oh, we only real people, which he's including himself in there, only visit the internet, and he has like what, 40,000 tweets.
Yeah, he's a crazy person.
Like, just
I feel like we should leave it at that.
He is crazy, but it's fascinating to watch, and I really want to write something on it at one point. I just haven't properly digested it yet, but we're going to get to your questions now. And you should watch the Cyberhumans video.
One last glowing endorsement of Cyberhumans.
It's so good, man. It is so good. All right. Let's see here. I'm trying to dig through all these questions already asking us about the coach. Like, it's week 3. I understand we have a losing record, but I don't think I can do this every time the Lions lose. I can't do this every time the Lions lose.
Matt Patricia.
Oh, yay. Another
Josh McDaniels.
More New England castoffs. Congratulations.
Yeah, we're not talking coaches until at least a bye week. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. All right. Evan Hanks, what players on defense are the Lions expected to have back next week? Will we actually have some linebackers? I think you talked about Antoine Williams probably being a return. What? Give me a percentage for Levy and Ansa, each of them.
Less than 5% for each of those guys this week. I don't think you're going to see either of them. I think... Also, last week was a little interesting with the Packers because the Lions played in a three-linebacker set a lot more than they usually do. We saw Xavier Gooden get 50% of the snaps, and he was the third linebacker. So that's something I don't think you're going to see much too often. So you're going to see Whitehead in there. You're probably going to see Kyle Van Noy as the number two linebacker, and that's probably all you're going to see for most of the game against the Bears. But I do expect Antoine Williams to be there in case they need him and when they go into that three linebacker set.
I know we wouldn't talk about coaches, but Waybay 51 brings up, if the Lions defense makes Hoyer look like an all pro this week, is it time to start discussing giving Terrell Austin the Joe Lombardi treatment?
And the Joe Lombardi treatment is hiring hiring a coach that has an infinitely better name.
Yeah, like the second part of Weibei's question, is there a position coach with a hilarious name that can come in and replace Austin?
I have one.
Don't say Ron Prince.
Nope. What about Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator Rod Marinelli?
Well, he'd have to be an in-house hire to be the interim, right? Let's go down the names of the defense, the coaches. So senior coaching assistant, Gunther Cunningham.
Oh, geez. Really?
Defensive lines coach, Chris Kotchurek. Defensive backs corner coach, Tony Auden. Defensive assistant, defensive ends, Matt Reich. Defensive quality control, Stephen Williams. Linebackers, Bill Sheridan. And defensive back safeties, Alan Williams. So Gunther and Chris are some pretty good firepower right there. I really like Gunther.
Gunther already had his turn.
Yeah. Gunther's not coming back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I forgot about that.
I mean, if we're taking the question seriously, the Lions don't have a Jim Bob Cooter either in name or in skill on the defensive side of their coaching right now.
The most important thing is name.
I mean, you could argue that the defensive backs coach has done a pretty good job, and I've already forgotten his name, even though you said it 10 seconds ago. I don't think the Lions are going to make that move.
Tony Auden?
I thought you said he was a linebackers coach. I don't know. Whatever. Secondary.
No, that was Bill Sheridan.
Oh, you're right.
Alan Williams.
Whatever. Alan Williams. There we go.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I don't think any of these guys are ready to take over defensive coordinator duties. So, yeah... Terrell Austin's doing a pretty bad job. I like to point out that last year he kind of righted the ship a little bit. There's a chance that he could do that again this year. But most importantly, the Lions just don't have that option behind him like Jim Bob Cooter last year.
I know we've been harping on, you know, Terrell Austin a little bit, but at the end of the day, I think it has to come back to personnel. And I hate to give people a pass because of injuries. You should be able to scheme much better than allowing your linebacker to cover Jordy Nelson.
Yeah.
There have been very poor lapses. But the kind of talent that's on the field, even when the Lions did right the ship in the second half last season, they had Ziggy Ansah playing out of his mind, right?
You're right to an extent. I just think
Haloti Ngata also didn't play very much in the first half last year either.
Yeah, but I mean, the Lions still do have a lot of those guys, and we talked a lot about the depth at defensive line, and we're not seeing production out of those guys. And I think Terrell Austin deserves a lot of blame for this. We had Jim Caldwell kind of talk about how he wasn't going to blame injuries for performance because, and I think I agree with him. If you're in the NFL, you have a special talent. And it's the coach's jobs to bring that out on you. And we have a lot of guys on this team who were on the original 53 playing games. That means they're good enough to play in games, and they're not playing up to a standard that they should be.
Okay, let's move on then. I've got one more. Actually, I remember my comment now. What about defensive coordinator Dominic Raiola?
Stop it.
Okay, next question. Let's go to CB Russ. Let's skip down a little bit to him because I really like this question. What is the most unexpected win-loss record NFL-wide so far?
Ooh, Eagles 3-0. Never saw it.
They've had a pretty easy start to the season, though.
Steelers was a big win, man.
I mean, aside from Steelers.
They beat the brakes off the Steelers. The last time that the Steelers lost by 31 points was in 1997.
Yeah. Eagles are a good pick. Minnesota is a pretty good pick without their quarterback, you know, left tackle, running back, defensive tackle. Like, they've got a ton of injuries and are killing it right now. The Panthers, they demolished them.
I want to go the opposite way on bad records. First off, he also asks about dumpster fires. Has Chicago replaced the Browns as the worst team right now? I know the Browns are still bad, even though they forcing Miami to overtime. The Miami's not good either. So let's not kid ourselves there.
Until Chicago's coach takes the wind in overtime, Cleveland still reigns supreme.
Hugh Jackson.
Hugh Jackson, the smart one.
I love you too much to be doing things like this to me.
I think New Orleans, their defense is a dumpster fire, man. Yeah, I mean, even with Drew Brees, it's just not enough anymore. They're 0-3. They're not going to be good.
That's not where I thought you were going to go with that.
I thought it was totally going to be the Cardinals. The Cardinals 1-2. That loss against the Patriots looks terrible, and then a loss to the Bills in the way they lost looks even worse.
And I think I mentioned this on a radio show I went on, but the Jaguars at 0-3.
That's what I thought you were going to say.
Look, man, like you lose to the Ravens, you lose. Like you were in it with the Packers. Okay, you're in it with the Packers. That's like a good one. But then you get dump trucked by San Diego, who's not good. And then you just get bone crushed. You just have that awful crushing loss to the Ravens, who are also really bad. Like,
there have definitely been some surprises so far this year, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, just looking all around. Let's talk about another surprise, because we have a question about this from GV42. What's the Patriots record at the end of the year?
16-0.
God, they're going to be okay. So what is it? Is Jacoby Brissett going to be out for week 4?
Yeah, but I think Garoppolo's coming back.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, like, they could probably start Danny Amendola or Julian Edelman at quarterback, and they will be 4-0 for the return of Tom Brady. I'm seeing like the most insane hot takes out there that it's basically a system quarterback thing now, which is shedding like shade on Tom Brady, but yeah. I don't know.
I'll say 15-1, and I mean
15-1.
Yeah.
It's they are so fucking lucky. I mean,
they're gonna go 6-0 in that division, right?
Yeah, no, because everyone in that division is fucking awful. Like, yeah. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Holy crap!
Fitzmagic, maybe.
Six interceptions. 3 of them were in the end zone.
And then the Bills and Dolphins are both just giant clusterfucks. Like, yeah, they're sweeping that division. They are so lucky. That is the most fucking lucky organization in all of sports. You go down to your third string quarterback waiting for your once in a generation quarterback to come back. And you're going to be undefeated.
Is it luck?
I don't want to just attribute it to Bill Belichick. It can't just all be.
But it might be. It might be.
Look, man, if it is, then he is a better coach than Vince Lombardi, Bear Bryant, and yep. Jimmy Johnson. And I'm missing Howard Schnellenberger. Who else am I missing from all time great coaches at every level?
Doesn't matter. Yeah, name names. Yeah.
Nick Saban at college only.
Yeah, Don Shula.
Yeah, like every like this
Bobby
is
Ross.
Bobby Ross, Bill Walsh,
Steve Mariucci,
just murking everyone, man.
Belichick's the greatest, and it hurts me so much to see
all hail him. The short sleeved hoodie.
He's so far ahead of everyone else, and I don't get it.
He's the only good coach in the NFL.
My favorite hot take from last week after the Brissett win on Thursday was that all of a sudden Tom Brady's accomplishments were diminished and he became
That's
a system quarterback.
About. Yes, yes. Yeah. System quarterback.
What?
So ridiculous.
That said, I do genuinely wonder what Tom Brady's career would be if he wasn't with New England.
At least one Super Bowl.
at least one, but probably not like as many as he has.
Probably not, because Belichick's the greatest coach of all time.
I mean, it always depends on where you go. If you land in Cleveland, he probably doesn't have a Super Bowl.
No, but I'm saying like a replacement level team, which is kind of what the trajectory of Drew Brees has been with the yes. Saints.
Right.
Like the Saints That's are not a good comparison. Team outside of Drew yep. Brees.
It's a very good comparison.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to another question here. Take a couple from Twitter.
I mean, they were pretty good with Aaron Brooks, but go ahead.
You love Aaron Brooks.
If you could pluck one college player and play him the rest of the year, who would you pick?
Lamar Jackson. I love Stafford. I love Stafford,
Get
but I would just
want here.
Lamar, 19-year-old Lamar Jackson, huh? Gunslinger Lamar Jackson. He's the Heisman favorite, though.
I'm semi kidding. I mean, I would definitely bring back the Wildcat and let him run it just because, God, that would be so much fun.
No, I'm going to go a little differently. I'm going to take a defensive player, especially since we're down Ezekiel Ansah. Yeah. I want Myles Garrett from Texas A&M. That kid, people are going to be talking about Myles Garrett come draft time. Book it, because he is probably the best defensive end in this draft.
I want to give my real answer before Jeremy can say his, and hopefully I steal it. I would draft Jabril Peppers.
I hate you both.
Hey, man, we need a punt returner.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that. God damn it.
No, I honestly don't really have an answer because I don't watch enough college. So I'll just say Wilton Spite.
Wilton Spite.
Because I know his name now, although I probably didn't pronounce it right.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Goddamn idiots.
Sorry we don't watch Notre Dame go 1-4 or whatever
Shut
the hell
the
they
fuck
are.
Up. I hate you.
God. I hate you so much. Can't believe we're talking about football on this podcast.
Yeah, we're talking. Yeah, why are we talking about football in the podcast?
I'm the only one that should be talking about college football.
We haven't talked about wrestling since SummerSlam. I hate that people are still using that against us. Ain't talked about since SummerSlam. Shut the hell up.
And we won't talk about wrestling anymore on this podcast. You have my word. Mark it. You can write that.
You have my word.
I'll go back on
Brian it. Brian Kress. I'm sorry. That last question, by the way, is from Mike Holman.
Way to go, Mike.
Brian Kress asks, is Matt Stafford the hero Detroit deserves? Ryan?
He's the hero we need, but not the one we deserve. all of you animals who wanted to trade him or some of you people who wanted to sit him before the end of the first half of the Packers game.
All of you who wanted Jake Rudock.
Yep. They're the ones that us in this room deserve, but not necessarily everybody.
Yeah.
But we love you guys. You know, you give us something to write about, write against.
Yeah, we have a working relation with y'all.
I was going to say, I love at least like 97% of the community at Pride of Detroit.
That's true.
Okay, let's get to a question from Finley, at Finley the Human. Why do we insist on playing zone on first downs to get shredded by play action?
I'm not sure if I've really noticed a heavy lean on zone versus man either way, but it's not like our linebackers are any better in man coverage anyways. There's so much going wrong with the linebackers right now, and a lot of it is a mental part of the game. Some of it's physical, too. I don't want to get too much into the X's and O's without, you know, being able to show you guys stuff, but
maybe that might be an on-paper thing to really, or, you know, we'll ship that out to Andrew.
Yeah.
Andrew likes this kind of stuff. We'll I know he was like floundering for ideas, so maybe we'll just pitch this out to him. He's listening. Hi, Andrew. That's your next assignment, Andrew. zone on first down.
I was going to say whether or not the linebackers are playing zone or man, it doesn't matter because Xavier Gooden
and Thurston Armbrister
is a special teams player, and Thurston Armbrister hasn't been with the team longer than 3 weeks. And Kyle Van Noy hardly played at all last year. So that's the problem.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of growing pains right now.
A lot. Dom at Domcakes wants to ask, who do we get mad at and blame for our defensive issues? I'm only bringing this up because, Dom, I want to congratulate you because you're coming from a very pure-hearted place. I want my cussing and rants to be informed opinions, he says.
I like that.
Dom, we will continue to educate you through the week and weeks ahead. Just stick with us at Pride of Detroit. Sold that like a champion.
Well, I mean, we talked about this a little earlier. Ryan and I disagree a little bit. I think personnel is obviously a problem. It's not what Terrell Austin was expecting, but he's got professional level players, and they're confused at their assignments. They're missing tackles. They're poor in coverage, and I think a lot of that has to fall on Austin. I don't know if you want me to give a percentage, but like 60-40 Austin.
I think Jeremy wasn't there a picture that you retweeted? I want to say it was either on Monday or even Sunday night where it showed three Lions players around one Packers player, and Jared Cook was wide open in the middle.
Yeah, I did a breakdown of that play today, and yeah, it was ugly, ugly.
Well, let's move on here. We got a couple more questions to get through. Single Digit asks, "We own Chicago." He obviously means we own the Bears, but whatever. But he asks,
We own the Bears.
He asks, however, why? That could have been a bit right there. He wants to ask, why does it have to be the Bears? Why can't we own the Vikings or the Packers or the Patriots or the Broncos? Should anyone be proud of owning the Bears?
Why can't you just be happy with beating the shit out of one team every year?
I hate Chicago. Look, I hate Chicago. I hate all their sports. I hate the Blackhawks. I hate the White Sox. I hate the Bulls. I hate the Bears. And I am very happy to beat up on Chicago, no matter how good they are or how bad they are.
And plus, let's not act like beating a division rival six times in a row is not a rare thing. That's a rare thing. You're not going to see. I mean, the Packers rarely did that to the Lions. The Lions held close with them pretty much since, 2008, have been playing them pretty evenly. And same with the Vikings. Just like a three straight sweeps of a division rival is rare for anyone because division games are hard. So we own the Bears, and I'm damn proud of it.
You should be proud of it.
Why can't we have a little fun here? Like, hey, we've got one nice thing going for us here, that we kick the Bears' ass a lot.
Nope, can't be happy about it.
It's got to be the Patriots, who aren't even in our division.
We play once every 4 years, so we should own them. Get out of here. Get out of here.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
With your Chicago.
I'm walking here. It's not even New York. Not even Chicago.
That's New York.
It's a little bit of both.
Critical perspective. Redrafting NFL quarterbacks to destroy its no fun label once and for all. The NFL and its 32 starting quarterbacks agree on a dispersal draft for 2017. All 32 quarterbacks will be redrafted in some order. Each quarterback will be guaranteed the starting job for the next 4 years. Given his relatively young age, 28, but proven experience, where does Matt Stafford get drafted?
Hold on. Are you drafting? I have so many questions. Are you drafting him into a situation in which he has a scheme already built?
I don't know.
Best of his ability.
I assume it's just going to be the logic of teams without quarterbacks, which is whoever is going to be at the top, which is probably going to be a bad team. I don't know. They're going to be starved for the quarterback, and they're just going to be like taking best quarterbacks available, I imagine.
I think we should tackle this question like we have 32 average teams who have every position filled out as average but a quarterback.
We're reshuffling the list cast here,
kind of. Yeah, but he's saying only for the next
four years.
So the next 4 years, period.
Well, that's good because it limits some of the veteran quarterbacks out there, because I'm not going to take Tom Brady for in perpetuity or whatever the hell it just for 4 years. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
And that's also pretty interesting because that'll take Stafford right through the NFL prime of his career, right? 28 to 32.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And I think later in that argument, he argues that maybe it's a top five quarterback off that board. And I mean, I did just call him a top five quarterback this year so far.
I thought you said top 10.
I ranked him in the top 10 originally, but I think earlier in the podcast, I said that he's playing at a top five level right now.
Some names. Would you take him over Derek Carr?
Yeah.
Yes.
Would you take him over Carson Wentz?
Yep.
Mm.
Oh, wow. Somebody really loves Carson Wentz.
He's played three games.
Over Carson Wentz.
Colin Kaepernick was like the next greatest quarterback after three games.
I still love Colin Kaepernick. I hope he starts this year at some point.
Dak Prescott.
No.
Andy Dalton.
Yes. Yes, I'm taking him over Andy Dalton. At this point, I'm taking him over Andy Dalton.
Yes has been my antonym. Yes.
Russell Wilson.
No.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Boy.
Russell Wilson is dynamic, man.
I think that's the first name that I'd probably say no, but Andrew Luck?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I'd take him over Andrew Luck.
I don't like Luck. I've been down on Luck.
There's only probably one other two names that I was Ryan Tannehill.
Hell no. Yeah, I mean, Stafford, hell yes, I would take Stafford over Tannehill. Tannehill sucks.
And the best quarterback in the league, Cam Newton.
No, I wouldn't take Stafford over.
So, yeah, Newton. I think, yeah, that's top five right there. Yeah.
Well, we haven't touched on Aaron Rodgers, which is an obvious no. I
left those names out, though, because, I mean, Rodgers is what? He's going to be 33 in December. Yeah, so 4 years from, I mean, he'll be 37.
I'll take the next 4 years of Aaron Rodgers over the next 4 years of Matthew Stafford.
Get out of here. I'll take Stafford over Rodgers right now, baby.
I might even take the next 4 years of Brady, to be honest.
Oh, stop it.
Brady doesn't have 4 years in him.
That system quarterback, he's not going to play with Belichick.
Get out of here.
Ed Wood asked at Edwin_IV, Edwin 4, wants to ask, too early to wonder who coaches the Lions in 2017? Caldwell? McDaniels, Patricia, Haley, Marone,
John C.
There's a deadly culture war being waged that isn't being discussed on Fox News, MSNBC, or CNN. Cyberhumans versus humans. People whose reality is shaped by the internet versus people whose reality is shaped by the real world. Right now, cyberhumans are crushing humans. It might be the most one-sided war in the history of the world. Cyberhumans live on three planets: Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. They use Facebook to promote their delusional lifestyles. They visit Instagram for sex. 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 They visit Instagram for sex.